Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Midtown Business Radio.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Midtown Business Radio. We have quite a crowd here today, Stone.
Yes, we do. We have good attendance here in the Business Radio X studio. We have some new friends. We're going to catch up with some old ones. And right out of the box on Midtown Business Radio this morning, we have no stranger to the Business Radio X microphone, the president, the grand poobah with Edivate. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Mr. Gordon Rogers. How you doing, man?
Very well. Thank you for inviting me today.
Now, Gordon, we met briefly last week at TEDx Peachtree. How was that event for you?
As usual, very inspiring and invigorating. I loved it. It was my fifth one.
Fifth one. So you're a veteran. Why don't you share with our listeners a little bit about TEDx and what they can expect if they attend a future event?
Well, I think their tagline is it's like a day spa for your brain. It's a really great place to kind of decompress, but also get really energized with some very interesting and insightful short but very pithy talks from people who are doing really interesting things that you might not have otherwise been aware of.
That's right. And TED, you can go to TED.com and see, it seems like, an infinite number of videos. And TED stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design. Or is that right?
That's correct, yes. Right. And with an X, those are independently run TED events.
And so I want to hear about Edivate. What is it that you guys do?
Well, we're not trying to do too much except to educate the entire world.
Yeah. So
other than that,
small goals are important.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I got to start somewhere.
So now, so what are you guys actually doing? How are you educating the entire world?
We are taking advantage of the huge onslaught over the last year or two of massive open online courses that are being produced by some of the world's leading institutions of higher learning, including Stanford, MIT, Harvard, and our own Georgia Tech right here in Atlanta. Basically, you can learn almost anything that you want for free, and our goal is to try and take the learning that people are doing on those sites, turning that into certification and accreditation for college so that you can use that to actually get gainful employment.
So now you're trying to be a curator of all this?
We're not as much a curator, although we do have a search engine that lets you find the courses that teach the skills you want to learn. But the missing link in the whole, what they're called is MOOCs, the missing link in the MOOC process is to turn that into accredited learning. So we are providing certification tests that are used by various accredited institutions for college credit.
Because a lot of times this information is out there. Anybody could participate by going through the course, but there is no kind of proof that you did this or mastered anything. Is that
correct?
Right?
And some of the leading course providers, such as Coursera, Udacity, and edX, they are providing proof, essentially proof that you, Lee, took this course.
I just hit play and walked away and got a sandwich.
Well,
right?
See, they have ways of checking on you now. And that way they know it was you that actually completed the course.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no end of course test or certification, and that's what we are providing.
So now how did you get involved with Edivate?
Well, I've been kind of an investor and mentor to EdTech startups around Atlanta for probably the last decade. I had my own e-learning company back in the 1990s, which did corporate e-learning. We had a learning management system. And through my involvement with Venture Atlanta, I met one of the co-founders of Edivate, Gareth Jenner, who's an amazing individual, and he had created this platform and convinced me that this was the next place to be, and I agreed with him, so I joined full-time as president.
So now, is your customer the user, the person that's looking for the education, or is your customer the creator of the content that you're developing the courses, you know, the tests for?
Our major customer is the end user who wants to take that learning that they've had, turn it into accreditation. So we are reaching those people. We have partnerships with test creators that can apply the certification to the learning.
Now, in your vision, is it something that you see people going through a variety of different courses and cobbling together some sort of a degree, or just kind of having a list of things they've mastered, skills they've mastered?
Well, yeah, there's sort of a trend out there called the do-it-yourself degree. Mm-hmm. And a lot of folks are probably aware of the huge student debt problem that's out there.
Yes.
Many people are partway through a college degree, but they don't finish it for whatever reason. So they don't have much credit, but what they do have is a lot of debt.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to reverse that equation. And so we're providing them with a way of, again, maybe cobbling together the learning and the courses they need that can lead to a degree, which then they can use to get employment.
Now, are you seeing any kind of proof that companies are going to buy that, like, and see that that's valuable, as valuable as a, or equal, or at least somewhat congruent to an actual degree from one college?
It's already happening in, certainly in the technology field. Employers like Google, Amazon, Microsoft, they are so anxious to get technically skilled employees. They are hiring people without any piece of paper, without any degree. If you can demonstrate mastery in a particular area that they need employment for, they will hire you on the spot. The long end of the tail is other people who are looking to hire mid-management, maybe accounting or HR managers. When they start hiring people with this kind of accreditation, then we've reached the tipping point.
But so it doesn't sound like your target, but I'm interested to know, impact you feel for K through 12 for MOOCs? What's your take on that?
Well, there's two ends there. One is on the supply side of teachers. Teachers need constant certification and upgrading, and they're very busy people. It's hard for them to get out of the classroom. Online certification, recertification offers them that ability in the classroom. Especially with charter schools, independent learners, many courses that people are interested in are not offered in a particular school building. With online learning, those can be available to anyone, anywhere.
So now, are you seeing, what type of person takes these online courses right now? Are they college age? Are they adults? Or is this kind of goof for an older person just to learn more?
Well, it's really all over the map. There are what you call lifelong learners. There's a lot of people who take these MOOCs who have no real motivation to get a job out of it. They just want to learn something. But the people who are highly motivated, the self-starters, they're the ones who maybe they live in a small town and they don't have access to the best universities, but heck, you can take an entire MIT degree online for free. So if they've got that motivation, now the material and the content is available for them.
Now, a lot of these courses, lots of people start them, but just a small percentage actually go through the entire course and even have mastery, isn't that?
That is absolutely true. What you have to look at is the law of large numbers. When Stanford offered the AI course, they thought a few thousand people would sign up. Over 100,000 signed up. Now, yes, 90% or more dropped out. You still had 10,000 people complete that course.
Which would have been years worth of students.
That
right.
Professor has not taught 10,000 people in the
career.
Classroom in their career.
Right.
So in that single 12-week period, they reached more than they would their typical career. And you had the highly motivated students coming out of that who Google looked at the top 1% and hired them immediately.
So now in the world of Edivate, what are you spending your time doing right now?
Completing the platform, which is about ready to go within the next 2 to 3 weeks, and we will start publicizing it through social media. We're creating links with all the course providers, and we have the tests ready to go, and then you'll start to see ads pop up about Edivate.
And then if somebody wanted to learn more, website?
Edivate.com.
Is there stuff there now?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of material there now.
What an exciting time for you. So you got whatever funding or resources you need at this phase. Is that accurate?
Yes and no. We've had funding. It's been bootstrapped largely to get to this stage.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to do another larger round early in 2014.
Well, we're excited for you. We're going to keep our eye on you and hope you'll come back to the studio and maybe bring a client or two at some point. We'll get caught up from their perspective.
Well, thank you. And in case anybody from the SEC is listening, that was not a solicitation of funds.
The guy has been learning, hasn't he? That's fantastic. Hey, listen, you going to hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. Thank you
very
much.
Terrific. All right. Next up on Midtown Business Radio, we have with us Cherie with Park Mobile. Cherie, I wasn't going to try to pronounce your last name, and I didn't ask you before we went on air. How do you pronounce your last name?
It's Fazell.
How would you like us to pronounce it during the broadcast? Same way?
That'd be perfect. Thank you.
Sure. So tell us a little bit about Park Mobile. What are you out there trying to do for folks?
So Park Mobile simplifies an essential daily activity, which is parking for most of us, by allowing you to pay for parking with your mobile phone.
Cool.
So anywhere?
The service is now available in 35 states in over 500 locations. We have 8,000 spaces here in Atlanta today, and we will be on all of the city's 2,500 spaces by the end of the year. We're in a pilot mode right now.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic. So how did the business get started?
Well, the business actually got started in Amsterdam back in the late 1990s. It was a very different service. You would actually call and tell someone you were parking. Later, you would do that through an IVR solution on the phone. And then when you were ready to leave the lot, you would call and tell them you were leaving, and they'd send you a bill at the end of the month.
So somebody said, hey, let's make an app for that? Or?
Well, yeah. So in 2008, the company expanded into the United States, and the model here was different for two reasons. One, people here pay for parking each time they park with a credit card.
Right.
And secondly, mobile apps were coming on the scene. So we developed and launched the first mobile apps to pay for parking.
Now, what's your role with the company?
Well, I'm the CEO of the company.
So when it moved here to the United States, you were the company in Amsterdam?
No, actually, today is my one-year anniversary with the company, and I joined a year ago when the founder decided to move into a founder's role and not an active day-to-day CEO role.
Mm-hmm. But how did it get to the United States?
It got to the United States because a guy with a vision thought this works in Amsterdam. We ought to bring it over to the U.S.
There's some parking happening in the United States that maybe they can benefit. So now, were you here in Atlanta the whole time?
Yes, we have been in Atlanta since the company Park Mobile USA was formed in 2008.
And so you're in the United States, you're here in Atlanta, and now you've got all of Atlanta locked down.
Yeah, we will soon have all of Atlanta locked down.
Now, what's that conversation like when you go to all the parking places? Like, how are you selling it to them? Because they go, well, we have a perfectly fine way of dealing with this.
Oh, exactly. Well, our major clients, we have sort of two categories. We have to grow an inventory of spaces where people can park.
Right.
And in that regard, we work with universities. We have Georgia Tech and Arkansas and Ohio State and Arizona State. We work with cities like Houston, L.A., Washington, D.C., Newark, New Jersey, and private operators and transit lots. And so it's different depending on which one you're selling to.
Right.
The cities are typically an RFP process, and that's how they select their vendor.
Mm-hmm. And but is that the only way a person could buy this? The parking is through this app now, or can they still put, you know, squeeze the dollar into the little slot?
If they wanted to, they could squeeze the dollar into the slot. The beauty of Park Mobile is that we can overlay, and we're an alternative payment means, regardless of what the equipment is. So we can put our solution on top of the most primitive slot box that you stuff a dollar bill in, and we can overlay on the newest, most expensive pay-and-display machine or single-space meter that takes credit cards.
Now, is there a way, because a lot of this is automated now, is there a way for me to tell if there's an opening or where, the spot, there's available parking my app?
Yes, absolutely. With many parking, central parking rights databases, they're called, coming online, there are providers out there that, and we partner with them, we don't provide this service, who not only tell you where all the parking lots are, what their hours of operation are, how much it costs, but increasingly they're telling you where a parking space might be available. It's not an exact science because you could drive around the block and someone could pull in right when you're getting there.
Sure.
But you remember yesterday when we were driving downtown to do the remote broadcast on the rooftop, I was on the phone in the other seat looking at the different parking lots, but how cool would it have been to know that we were going to, when we got there, we could just pay for it with our phone instead of the ridiculous valet charge that you stuck me with. but also to know, look over here, there's six or eight slots, let's shoot for that parking lot. That's fantastic.
So now what's next for you guys? You just keep going city by city?
Yes, we keep expanding city by city, and we just are adding Miami Beach right now and Cincinnati and Atlanta. And we're also working with maps providers because we believe down the road there will be an integration of the navigation experience as you're getting closer, since you navigate really to where you're going to park. The available lots will show up, the information, then the availability. And when you pull into that lot, you'll be prompted right through the navigation app to pay with your car or your phone. So we're doing a lot of work right now with the car manufacturers and their connected car initiatives as well.
We'll try to get you introduced to somebody from, I don't know, say a Ford. Just give me a few minutes to see if I can get that figured out for you. I'll try to put that together for you in the next hour or so.
That would be great.
Would that
Thank
be helpful
you.
To you? I want to ask you, I want to get some real-time consulting. As a growing company, obviously very successful, the buck stops with you. You know, our little company, we're starting to grow. What counsel, if any, do you have to offer as you expand to areas where you may not physically be very often, you personally, in terms of recruiting and developing good talent? Have you cracked that code?
Yeah, that's a hard code to crack, but you know, I believe that you can, you know, you hire smart people and you hire motivated people, and then you fit them into the part of your organization as, you know, as time evolves. And I agree completely with the comments made earlier that a lot of times it's not the degree or the piece of paper, even though, you know, I have a couple of them myself, but it's someone who is just wants to do a good job. And excellent customer service has really been the secret of our success and how we've grown so rapidly over the years.
Now, do you put a body in each of the markets you're in, or do you handle those relationships remotely?
We handle those relationships remotely. Today, even our business in Australia and New Zealand is handled out of Atlanta.
Wow. Good stuff.
Well, but the human relationship, it's even that much more important, even though you've got all the bells and whistles and the technology and all of that. It's, at some point, it's very important to have someone who can manage and navigate the human relationship and live up to the customer experience that you're advocating. I mean, that's still important in your business as much as it is technology-driven, right?
Exactly, and we handle that through extensive social media efforts. And it's very rare, but if we ever see a slightly negative tweet, you know, we respond to it immediately. We send the person a T-shirt. Yeah, no, I don't want a bunch of negative tweets out there, so people get T-shirts. But we also have a live customer service center in Atlanta that answers calls 24/7. And so in today's world of technology, we are able to provide that close touch and high customer service remotely.
Well, I mean, it's so important. We were saying, I don't know if it was on a show yesterday or at the remote broadcast or something, you're not only competing with other people in your general space, but all the people that are enjoying your service, they're getting great service from the FedExes, the Amazons, some of these very good service providers. And in their mind, that's what a good customer experience looks like. You got to live up to that, right?
Well, we absolutely do, but we also have to live up to a revenue model that's 35 cents a transaction.
Oh, wow. So where can our listeners go and learn more?
They can go to parkmobile.com, and they can download our award-winning apps at either the iPhone, BlackBerry, Microsoft, Google,
Android.
App stores.
You're on all the every platform, right?
We have native development for every platform, correct.
Well, thanks for coming in and visiting with us.
Hey, thanks for having us, and we hope everyone will park with Park Mobile in Atlanta soon.
I'm sure they will. How about hanging with us while we visit with some of our other guests?
I'd love to.
All right, next up on Midtown Business Radio, it's the Karen Kelly hour now.
That's it. It's all about Karen.
We have Karen Kelly and friends. Karen is executive director of
No,
exhibits.
No.
No?
Just director.
She's just director of exhibits and education.
I'm trying to help you out, Karen.
Thank you. And I appreciate that. But I have a fabulous boss, and I want to keep her.
All right. Why don't you tell them who and what you are?
Okay. I'm the director of exhibits and education at the Children's Museum of Atlanta. I have the best job on the planet. They pay me to work with kids and play with really big toys.
And why don't you, before we get going, the Children's Museum of Atlanta, why don't you talk about that a little bit?
Okay. We are 10 years old this year. It's our 10th anniversary. We are on the corner of Centennial Olympic Park Drive. We are for kids ages 0 to 3rd grade, and we are a hands-on, minds-on museum. When the kids come into the museum, they can touch and play with everything we've got, and they don't know they're learning stuff. That's the secret to our success. They're having a great time, but there's all kinds of education buried in there.
And then your role is to come up with these cool exhibits, right?
Right. My role is to come up with these cool exhibits and our fabulous educational programs that partner with our exhibits.
Now, you have existing that are there all the time, mm-hmm. but plus you have special ones that come and go, right?
Yep. And we call them learning zones because they're kind of areas in the museum. So our four permanent learning zones are one is about tools and building, tools for solutions. We have one that's called Fundamentally Food, where kids can take food from farm to table. Mm-hmm. And we have our Milkable Cow in that section, so you can milk a cow when you come to the museum. We have our Leaping into Learning section, which is our toddler area. We have our own fishing pond, where you can go fishing and catch fish and do some early science learning. And let your creativity flow, which has this wonderful paint wall that's one of our favorite things, where kids can actually paint on the wall, which they love.
And I'm sure parents love that too.
They love that too, because they're not doing it at home. We also have this wonderful temporary gallery called the Morph Gallery, which is where we house our changing exhibit program. And we have three temporary exhibits each year. And right now we have this wonderful exhibit from the Oregon Museum of Science and Industry called Moneyville.
And so what happens at Moneyville?
In Moneyville, everything happens. You can find out what people used to use for money. Most people's favorite is that chocolate was a form of currency at one point.
It still is in my house.
To playing the stock market, to running your own lemonade stand and figuring out what you have to invest in the lemonade stand, to detecting counterfeit money. And many parents' favorite is printing money with their faces on it.
Oh, that's cool.
So you can go ahead and put money with your faces on it. And we have a fabulous educational program that goes with us. So we have these wonderful actor educators called Imaginators. So they create mini musicals that the kids can come and see with their parents. They do guided field trips and special programs with the exhibits as well.
So now you brought some of the people that are involved with Moneyville with you.
Yes. We have wonderful partners. We are a very small organization. So we live with our partners, and they are fabulously helpful. We have Chelsea Peterson here from PNC. And this nice gentleman from Ford is a great partner, but I think this is the first time I've met you, so I'm going to be embarrassed and say
Hi,
that.
Karen, right now. I'm Robert Morgan.
It's so nice to meet you. And Ford. Ford has been a great partner and PNC for several years, partnering with our science programming. PNC has been funding our early learning initiatives. They're terrific partners. And I'm going to let them talk more about the partnerships.
All right. Why don't we start with you, Chelsea? I mean, sure. A bank is kind of a logical partner for Moneyville, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We first started working with Jane Turner and the Imagine It folks when we decided we really wanted to focus on the importance of private-public sectors in the community and just really getting them educated on why it's important to get our early learners educated from birth to five. So we actually signed on to do their inaugural golf outing this year, which was a huge success. We brought together some new relationships to the museum, which is huge. But then Jane came to us and said, we really appreciate you. We love everything PNC does, but we have this really cool one-time exhibit that's coming to the museum, and it just sounds like it would make total sense for PNC to be involved. So it was a no-brainer for us.
Now, are you involved in that, okay, we write a check and that means we're involved, or what does involved mean for PNC?
So there's really two main philanthropic initiatives that PNC focuses on. One of them is obviously economic development and investing in the community and just making sure that we're stimulating the economy. The other one is our main philanthropic focus, and it's an initiative called Grow Up Great. It really focuses on ensuring that our early learners are ready for kindergarten.
Now, is this through PNC, the company, or PNC Foundation?
This is through the PNC Foundation, which is under the PNC Financial Services Group.
And then where is your role?
So I am the manager of client and community relations for here in Georgia alone. So we really have a local approach to doing business in the community. Mm-hmm. We have a local regional president here. I manage our community relations for just Atlanta and greater Atlanta alone.
And why don't we talk about PNC, because obviously this is a great work that you're doing with the Children's Museum, but let's learn a little bit about PNC.
Sure. So PNC has been around for over 150 years as one of the top banks in the country. We came to Atlanta. It's been almost 2 years now. And we have about...
Have you been with them only in Atlanta, or you were with them
I was actually with them in a different market in Detroit. So I helped them transition through the national city conversion up there with their regional president and the community relations team. Worked a lot with the Grow Up Great program there.
So how are you enjoying Atlanta?
Oh, we love Atlanta. My husband and I live in West Midtown, and we keep trying to recruit our family from Michigan to come down. It's actually snowing there today.
See that? You're calling it, look, blue sky here. So when you came here to Atlanta and PNC, you're trying to spread the word about the good work that you guys are doing, it was logical to partner with Children's museum, right?
It was. So the Grow Up Great initiative was really started in 2004. It's a $350 million multi-year, multi-language initiative that really just focuses on ensuring that our kids from birth to five are ready for kindergarten. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of research that says pretty much every single $1 invested in that space, there's a return of a $16 investment. So it makes sense for us as bankers.
That's good math for you, right?
Sounds good to us, yeah.
And then so now that you're here in Atlanta and you're helping serve the community, this is one part of how you serve the community. What are some other initiatives that you're doing for the Atlanta folks?
It is. So we love the Children's Museum. We're actually going to be announcing a grant later this week. It's going to be based around financial education for young folks. We're going to be mm-hmm. targeting 350, 3, 4, and 5-year-olds over a 2-year period. So we're really going to teach them about the foundations of money management at an early age. Mm-hmm. Sesame is one of our partners, and they've created a product specifically for PNC. It's called For Me, For You, For Later. And we'll be launching that out into the community to help teach kids early on about spending, saving, and sharing.
Now, so that's a young child initiative. Do you have any small business initiatives?
We do. We actually, so Grow Up Great isn't our only initiative here and the only thing that we focus on from the foundation. Obviously, we do a lot with arts and culture. We're involved with the Woodruff Arts Center and the Alliance mm-hmm. Theater. We've supported the Jazz Festival for the past couple of years. So there's obviously other avenues that we target as well.
And that's your role with the bank, is to kind of find the right partners?
It is. It's to work with our partners and just ensure, and obviously spreading the word and getting, like I said before, the public private sector is involved in the community and stimulating the economy here.
So now, how have you been through the Moneyville exhibit?
I have. I was actually there when we first launched it. It was so much fun. I took my face on some currency there. and it was just really great to see the Imaginators who come to life and just get the kids really excited about learning about this exhibit.
So I have a plug. I have a PNC branch, I don't know, probably a block from my house, walking distance. I have a meeting with financial advisors on Friday to take a look at stuff. Okay. And I'm excited to tell them, look, I know you probably have a lot to share with me, but I already know about Moneyville. So I'm ready for level 2 financial planning. But they are, at least my experience at that branch, and I'll tell you, it's at Johnson Ferry and Lassiter. They are mm-hmm. so genuinely invested in the customer experience. You know, I feel like Norm coming into Cheers when I walk in there. And, you know, they introduce me to the other people that can serve me. You guys are doing a great job with the culture there.
Good. I love to hear that. So with Moneyville, obviously, we're going to do some sort of financial mm-hmm. education for the adults that are involved. Right. So any parent or caregiver or adult that visits the museum, which is a stipulation, you cannot enter the museum without a child with
right.
you.
Right.
But any of those folks will get a financial education class for free. Mm-hmm. So their kids will be partnered with the Imaginators, while PNC will host two different classes for financial education.
So you have the kids right. learning and the adults.
Adults learning. Yeah, so it's called Financial Fridays. We're doing them this month in November.
Wow.
And then we're going to everybody blow their budget in December for Christmas. And then in January, good. We're coming back. And by the way, you spent all your money. Now we're going to help you save it back up again. So it's really awesome to have PNC partnering with us on that. It's really huge for our families and our parents.
Absolutely. So we'll offer two different classes. One is called Banking Basics, and it basically just helps you get established with a checking account and just understand, you know, how to withdraw and save some money. The other one is called Budgeting. That'll really just teach you how to budget, especially for the holidays, mm-hmm. And just making sure that you're financially stable from now into the future.
Well, for whatever it's worth, I would not lose the For You, For Me, For Later. I think that'll work well with your adult class, too. That makes perfect sense.
It does. Yeah, Sesame's been a great partner of ours.
So I want to talk to the Ford guy too. Robert, clock in over there, buddy. Lean
okay.
in and tell us a little bit about what's going on in your
like
world.
I understand why PNC would want to do Moneyville. What's your angle on this?
Well, you heard from Chelsea and Karen, and they're so energetic. Why would you not want to? Karen's got it figured out, and Ford has been working with various partners since 1949 in the community, and this is just one of many. We've put $23 million into the city of Atlanta since 2000, partnering on community-based events, education. Mm-hmm. These are critical cornerstones of the Ford Fund, and we continue to do that, and we welcome the partnership. Right. So it's nice to meet you.
And we're really excited because one of the things when we opened, there was a science museum in town, SciTrek. But
that's
what
right.
sadly happened is SciTrek has closed, and we are now more stepping into that role. And Ford has been a fabulous partner with us. They fund our science programming and our science imaginators on the go. So we take science out into the schools thanks to Ford, and we're very excited because we are going to be getting a Ford Connect vehicle to really take our science on the go. I don't remember when it's supposed to arrive, but we went
what
out
is
and
a Ford Connect vehicle.
So we have a new model called the Transit Connect. This is part of our initiative to improve fuel economy in the United States, and the Transit Connect delivers class leading fuel economy but also class leading cargo room. So it's a perfect match. We've also donated one to the Atlanta Food Bank. So these are great vehicles and very purpose-built for their use in great organizations like the Children's Museum.
So now it must be a challenge for a company like Ford, you know, big company, everybody knows who you are. How do you choose which a group to partner with? Because probably everybody is knocking at your door.
Well, you know, you have to go back to your strategy overall. And at Ford Motor Company, as I said, there's three main tenets to the Ford Motor Company Fund. One is education, innovation and education. One is community involvement. And then last but not least, and would make sense, is automotive-related safety and training surrounding that, mainly with teenagers through our driving programs. So those are the cornerstones. We pour every request through that filter and obviously take each one of them seriously. And having relocated from Detroit, Chelsea knows that Ford has put a lot of money into Michigan, but also the other 49 states as well.
Absolutely.
So now, when they came to you with this Moneyville exhibit, how did you see yourself getting involved?
Well, you think about it, just the way the program is put together, and, you know, I could definitely relate as the child of two educators. A lot of kids learn by doing, and this whole tactile experience that they go through at the Children's Museum, and as a member of the Children's Museum for many, many years, there's a tremendous amount of benefit in teaching the kids not only about money but other things that obviously this Children's Museum, and if you're a member, you get to go to other museums as well, which is always a benefit on vacation. And our children have learned from that. And obviously that is a personal story, but for Ford, it just fits very nicely in with our approach towards education and innovation. This is a different way of teaching kids and to teach them about money early on, and obviously partnering with PNC as well. It's a very holistic approach and very experiential, which is core to our brand.
Now, Karen, you must be super proud to have these two sponsors here with you. And
I really am.
Obviously very enthusiastic about the whole experience. Now, how do you make that magic happen?
You know, the nicest thing about working at the Children's Museum is that it's all about kids. And as Chelsea mentioned, investment in early childhood is so important, and it pays back enormously. So we actually, our partners, leap in with both feet. They're excited, and
it sounds like you try
to
integrate them into the exhibit. Like
absolutely, into the experience, because they're part of it. And if they see how their time and energy are being spent and the payback, it matters hugely to them. And we want to honor that.
So now, can you talk about early on, like when Moneyville was in the conceptual stage, how did you kind of strategically say, I'm going to get them involved? Like, were they involved early in the process, like, or after it was already established?
Well, one of the things you have to, we plan our museums exhibits 2 to 3 years out, especially the traveling exhibit program. So PNC wasn't actually even Atlanta when we first had Moneyville scheduled, but then they got here and we're like, ooh. And with Ford, it's been an ongoing partnership, so it kind of naturally connects. And sometimes partners come to us and it's outside the box. You know, you're right. We might not have thought Ford would be interested in Moneyville, but they got excited about it, so we pulled them right in as soon as we could. Our partners get invited to be parts of advisory committees and kind of throw out ideas. We love the fact that our partners ground us in the real world. It's very easy in any job to get your head down and just focused and not hear what's going on around you. So our partners help base us in what's really going on. The thing about working at a children's museum is I get to learn something new every day. I'm a moderate expert in a lot of things, but not a real expert in anything. So I rely on people like Chelsea and Robert and their companies to help us ground and do real world stuff is impactful for kids.
I think the great thing is at the Children's Museum, we have the Morph Gallery. So there's always something new coming into town. They never have the same exhibit twice. So when they approached us about Moneyville and it only being a one-time exhibit, I mean, it was really easy for us to hop on board as a bank here. We want to educate our kids.
Right.
Well, I have a question for both Chelsea and Robert, because obviously PNC and Ford are very forward-thinking organizations. Mm-hmm. The reason I say that is it's not like you can walk back to your office, Robert, and start demonstrating up on the screen the immediate or even near-term ROI and hanging out with Karen and them and doing the Moneyville, right? So the environment must be very different in both of your organizations maybe than it is in some. How do you keep the enthusiasm up for this? Somebody used the term long tail earlier in the conversation, for this longer, more sustained investment.
So for us, obviously, a short-term, understanding of what we're getting out of this is to understand how many adults actually come to our financial education classes.
Okay.
Obviously, we're still a bank, and we have many retail locations. So if we can drive traffic into our branches,
that's a win, right?
That's a win for us. And obviously, if they can mention it was through some branding or some experience they learned at the Children's Museum, that's obviously another avenue as well. Again, we take a holistic approach. We're looking into next year. We've been partners with Children's Museum since we've been down here. And I think doing that inaugural golf outing every year and just seeing what new partners we can bring to the team is another new win for us as well.
What's like a golf outing? What is the benefit of a golf outing for you?
So for the Children's Museum, we're raising money, and it's really going to go towards educational programming for the Children's Museum.
Is that one of your big fundraisers?
Actually, it's our first one we did this year, and it worked out really well. So we were very excited.
So that
we're
was
really
a
excited.
New initiative.
It was a really new, first time ever this past September. And so we've got the next one coming up next
And then
September.
So like a golf outing, again, that was new for you, mm-hmm. but that's something that would benefit a PNC because then you're getting the adults that you want that are going to be the users of your services.
Right. It provides us an opportunity to just network with some new folks. We're still fairly new here in Atlanta. So we're still establishing those relationships.
And relationships are important, right? I mean, in your business,
that's
the most critical,
important
right?
thing, yeah.
Now,
I want to hear Robert talk about this ROI thing because I'm sure he's got it figured out.
Yeah, the kids that go to the museum don't drive a lot.
It's a great question.
That was a fantastic question.
It was, yeah. I'll give you credit for that one. You have to go back to the start of our company in 1903 with Henry Ford, and there was always it was always more than making cars. It was about making a better world around him. And when this organization was formed in 1949, that's really the cornerstone. Investing in education, investing in our children, investing in our communities benefits all of us in the long term. We continue to do that 64 years later through the Ford Fund. So we're not in there looking over Karen's shoulder trying to decide whether or not the person going through Moneyville at this time is a Ford owner or not. We're trying to develop a relationship and an affinity for the brand. But more importantly, we're trying to invest in the communities. A healthier Atlanta, a healthier community. Healthier next generation just means more business for all of us and a better world, and that's really what Ford's about and the Ford Motor Company Fund.
And it's not just a Robert mindset or even a Robert's department mindset. That Ford Motor Company thinks and behaves in this fashion, obviously.
Well, there's really a lot of credit due to the organization because they've developed credibility, as has Georgia Tech, as has the Atlanta Food Bank, as has JDRF through the years. We don't go to Karen and say, prove to us that this is a good idea. We go to Karen and say, how can we support you and your initiatives here in the Atlanta community? So that credibility, mm-hmm. going a little bit deeper with our partners, having long-term relationships, not short-term, in-and-out type of relationships, I think is best for both of us. And hopefully the organization feels the same way.
Well, it sounds like it does in the terms of they're not just looking at you as a bank to fund things. They're looking at the best way to serve you, mm-hmm. and you're looking the best way to serve the community and the museum. So it really does foster this kind of ecosystem that everybody is kind of watching each other's back, mm-hmm. and you're each trying to make sure that everybody benefits.
Absolutely. At PNC, we pay every single employee 40 hours a year to volunteer into the Grow Up Great specific early education space for our company.
So you want them to go out in the community and participate.
Absolutely.
Right. And that said, we actually do evaluate what we do. Mm-hmm. We don't want to just throw stuff on our museum floor and not have it have an impact. So we also kind of do little returns on investment. How is this working? Did the kids learn something? Did they learn about earning, spending, saving, and maybe sharing money?
Right.
So we also share that information with our funders because they have invested in our work and our educational activities. So we want them to know that their work did have an impact.
So now if somebody wanted to go to the Moneyville, how long is it there for?
It is up through January 12th.
Okay, so through the rest of this year and a little into
2014.
Now, Do you mind, Robert, sharing why a corporation should invest in the Children's Museum? Like, why is that important?
Well, I think investing in the next generation is critical to all of our success, whether it be through educational programs or community involvement. And again, our connection with this goes back to the beginning of our company, and it will continue. And I think that the Atlanta Area Food Bank, as I mentioned, Georgia Tech, you know, on the secondary education, our funding for teachers, all of this connects very well with our brand and what we're about. But investing specifically in the Children's Museum, again, this is just something that's core and fundamental to the overall success of this community.
Because, Karen, it's important for you to have corporate sponsors. I mean, you can't rely just on people bringing their kids there, right?
We can't rely just on people bringing their kids there because, just like any educational institution, if we charged everybody exactly what it costs to run the place and do our programs, it would be
kind
of
expensive.
It would be out of expensive. Right. I can tell you how much, but it would be a little expensive. They allow our corporate partners help us do business and reach all the kids in Atlanta. We get around 200,000 visitors a year. Of that 200,000, nearly 30,000 are low to no income families. Mm-hmm.
And then they get to participate and learn and benefit.
So it's across the community where it's accessible as possible. And that's frankly thanks to our corporate partners. We could not do it without them.
Right.
I think it's really important for hopefully your listeners to understand that big companies like PNC and Ford Motor Company have employees that are out there every single day investing in their communities through their own personal time, through board sponsorships or memberships, and through the personal time that each company, whether it be PNC or Ford, giving time off. I mean, that's money that the company is essentially donating. It's not earmarked maybe in these organizations, but we have volunteers literally monthly at the Atlanta Area Food Bank. We've been sponsoring the zoo here in Atlanta for 25 years. So we're pouring money into the community, and these corporations exist not only to provide goods and services, but also to turn around and service a community, and I think that's important to note.
Right. It is important, and that is our mission here at Business Radio X, is to be a place where businesses can come on and tell the good story that they are helping communities, because we do think that traditional media typically doesn't appreciate that to the level I think that the communities appreciate it. Because, you know, the children, like you said, the Children's Museum would be a different entity if
Absolutely.
There wasn't corporate sponsors.
No question.
You may not even exist.
Sad but true.
Right?
Yes.
And we have proof that there's museums that have come and gone here.
Right.
That if they had...
had stronger partnerships, yes, they might not have.
So then you have to be mindful of that. And we are appreciative of all the corporate sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if somebody wanted to go to Moneyville, what's the website for Children's Museum?
Children'sMuseumAtlanta.org.
Great. And Chelsea, what's PNC? Where can people learn more about what's going on at PNC?
You can visit PNC.com. To learn a little bit more about our Grow Up Great program, you can go to PNCGrowUpGreat.com or stop in any of our 65 retail locations across Atlanta.
65? Wow. Good for you
and
guys.
Growing.
And Ford, what's the best way to learn more about what's going on in the world of Ford?
I'd like for you this afternoon to go out and buy a Ford Motor Company product.
Everyone here is committed to that.
All right. Outstanding. No, all kidding aside, one of our wonderful Ford dealers, 3,200 nationwide. We'd love for you to stop by and visit one of our Ford dealers and drive one of our class-leading in fuel economy across the board, every segment products. That's something we've committed ourselves to literally 10 years ago, and we've delivered. Mm-hmm. So we hope you'll get out and get behind the wheel of one of our products, and we're confident it'll sell you on its own merit, just as PNC does when you go into one of their banks. So thanks for the opportunity to speak
to you.
Sure,
and it's important, the listeners, that you do support the companies that are supporting the entities you're enjoying in the community.
What a delight having you guys in the studio today and learning about this. And to me, it's so much fun that we get a chance not only to learn about it, Lee, but we get a chance to turn around and then try to help get the word out. Keep up the good work and don't be a stranger. Come back and let us know what's going on from time
Absolutely.
To time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All three of you. Hey, how about hanging out with us while we visit with our last guest?
Sure. Absolutely.
You're going to really like his story.
You most certainly are our headliner. He's the most patient man, if not on the planet, at least in the studio. He started out in the upper deck. We moved him to the cheap seats. He's now at the final table, as they say on World of Poker. Please join me in welcoming President and CEO of Midtown Alliance, Mr. Kevin Green.
That's right. Thank
All
you.
Right. Welcome to the show, man.
So Thanks. Why don't you share a little bit about the Midtown Alliance?
We're a nonprofit with a rather modest goal of creating the most amazing urban place in the Southeast.
And we're right in the heart of it here, right?
You are. You're ground zero
for this. So now Midtown, what's unique about Midtown? Why should people care?
Well, it's a vibrant urban district that's walkable and bikeable, and there's places to walk to and things to do, and it's in a pretty tight geographic area that's got great connectivity, whether it's 200 acres of adjacent green space at Piedmont Park or Fox Theater, Woodruff Arts Center, or PNC's future headquarters right on Peachtree Street. So apparently it's working.
So now, what's your role in the Alliance? What was your vision?
Well, I've been with the organization for about 2.5 years, so I inherited a very strong organization. And frankly, if I tried to mess it up, I probably wouldn't be successful. There's so much positive momentum.
They built a good foundation for you.
Absolutely. But the elevator version is Midtown, when I came to Atlanta, which was mid-'80s, was the place that you wanted to kind of roll up the windows and hit the gas and try to get from downtown to Buckhead without getting stopped at a light.
That's not the same Midtown anymore.
It is not the same Midtown, and it's really a testament to a lot of committed business leaders, a lot of committed community leaders that put together a blueprint, which is a physical plan of what they wanted Midtown to be. And ultimately, the blueprint got baked into the zoning, which was the single largest rezoning in the city's history. And unlike a lot of plans, it actually got built to the tune of about $4.5 billion worth of investment just since 2000, all within about a 1.2 square mile area.
Now, what's the perimeter of Midtown?
A couple of different answers to that. There's a very clear boundary of the Midtown Improvement District, and that's the area where commercial property owners actually pay in towards the support mm-hmm. of the district. And that's, again, a little over a mile square. Think of it as kind of a long north-to-south district with Peachtree Street running right down the center of it. It goes all the way down the north to the Amtrak station at the Peachtree Bridge and to the south to the other Peachtree Bridge right around Pine Street, mm-hmm. all the way to Piedmont Park to the east, and then the connector on the west. And it actually reaches across the connector and picks up Turner Broadcasting. And there's a greater Midtown, which people can kind of define for themselves, including the West Midtowners.
So now, in the Alliance, your role is what? To make sure everybody plays nice together? What are you doing?
We do a lot of things. If there's anything under construction in the public right away in Midtown, it's generally our project. So we do a lot of capital improvements, physical improvements. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of programs, whether it's public safety or clean and green, marketing communications, urban design, working with new developers on buildings, making sure that they really aspire to what we try and do in Midtown, which is create a walkable place.
So walkable is important, right?
It's our.
What about bikeable?
Bikeable is important as well. Yeah.
What
as
about
is drivable and parkable.
Parkable.
Drivable and parkable.
So you cover everybody in this room, pretty much, right?
Yeah. And so some that aren't even here.
Businesses from out of town that are being courted to come in town, or do you ever hang out with the economic development type folks and run them through Midtown and try to get them to look in this area? Or?
We do. A lot of times, I think things are changing, and we see that in everything that we've talked about today. But I think increasingly there's a premium on walkable urban places that you can get to and get out of. And, people want a place where they can access it and they can park their vehicle or access it via transit. We've got really robust transit infrastructure in Midtown, which is also a calling card. You know, 4 rail stops a block off of Peachtree is with a 1-seat ride to the world's busiest airport is a pretty good calling card. So,
and you also have a university in the mix of this too,
We've got really 2 universities and a college. You got Georgia Tech that jumped the gulch and set up Tech Square, which just celebrated its 10-year anniversary, which has been absolutely transformative. And I think it's one of the better kept secrets, the accelerators and the incubators they've got that are
like in the Synergy building,
right? And they've got a new high performance computing center that's under construction now, a little bit south of that site.
And you have the Hippopotamus folks, right?
Yeah, the Hype. I was hanging out with the Hype last night, which is a co-working space in the basement of the Biltmore, really a collaborative space.
Which is a gift for those guys to give to the community.
It absolutely is. It's financed by a couple of entrepreneurs that wanted to basically a place where people could get together and innovate and collaborate. Mm-hmm. And so they've created the space. It's free of charge. And we've got SCAD, Savannah College of Art and Design, that anchors the north end of the district. And then Emory University Hospital Midtown and everything going on in the south end of the district.
Now, there's something called an innovation district. Is that the innovation district, or is that somewhere else?
Innovation district is really all over Midtown with the three anchor institutions, the three I just mentioned, with kind of an epicenter right in the center at Tech Square.
So now, is some of your role wooing companies to come to Midtown?
That's some of our role. I think our role really more is to create an exceptional urban place and an exceptional and welcoming urban experience. So that's everything from the things we build to the programs that we run to the grants that we're able to receive to do stuff.
So now you're constantly reaching out, I would imagine, to the business owners in the community and the universities and all of the other entities that are here to talk about ways to make it a more livable, walkable, you know, green part of town, right?
Absolutely.
Because that's an important initiative for you, right?
That's our focus. It's everything we do is focused on top-notch walkability.
And then how do you work with a company? Like if, say, you went, because, you know, PNC, you may not be aware PNC is coming, or, you know.
No, we're totally
you're aware of that, right?
We work with
exactly. So, like, how do you work with PNC? How do you talk to them about what your mission is and to make sure it's aligned with their mission and figure out ways to work together?
Well, I think, first of all, the fact they've located there is sort of a testament that it's a location of choice for them, and it's where they think that they're going to thrive and grow as a company. So we want to make sure that their employees are aware of what's around, whether that's a walking map that tells them what's within a 5 or a 10 minute walking distance or what's going on this evening, you know, that's within easy striking distance. Or, you know, we've got councils that, like a marketing communications council, where marketing communications professionals can plug in and understand everything that's happening.
So now, but like, so you get wind that they're thinking about putting a headquarters somewhere. Like, where are you in the loop of this? Are you, after they've decided to move in, then you say, let me talk to somebody over there and tell them and educate them about the ways of Midtown?
It varies. It really varies when we're brought into the conversation, if at all.
But
again, I think the beauty of what we're accomplishing, and I think it's a renaissance that's happening in the city all around, is that it sort of speaks for itself. And I don't know that people need to be walked through it to understand it. They can walk down the street and see and look and feel it and say, you know, this is a place we think we want to be.
Right, but once they decide to be here, don't they need a Sherpa to kind of help them get the most out of it?
We don't carry
their
furniture up to their offices.
I know, but you can help them appreciate all the stuff that's around there
that
they may not be aware of.
And it's everything from knowing what's around them to if they're relocating from a place. We've got companies that come from, for example, the suburbs in town, making sure they understand how to get there, what their commutes can be like, how to make it easy on them getting around. You know, where the 2-for-1 special is that
day. Right, because they don't know what they don't know. And,
absolutely.
And especially if they're coming from a different market. Like I've talked to lots of people that come from some of the northeastern cities. The vibe here is very collaborative. There's a lot of businesses that help other businesses. There's a lot of organizations that help other organizations. In some markets, it's not that way. It's kind of a zero-sum game. And Atlanta's secret sauce, in a lot of ways, is this level of collaboration where people truly want to help other people.
I couldn't agree more. I think you just nailed it. And that kind of collaborative giving spirit should be a matter of fierce civic pride for people in this
right.
region.
I mean, like you mentioned, the Hippopotamus folks. These guys are entrepreneurs. They have their own business to run. And they just said, here, free space for people that we don't even know.
And free coffee.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's, in some markets, that's unheard of. And we got to appreciate that and give them the credit that they're due.
Absolutely. And I think that's just one example of some of the amazing things happening around our city every day.
Right. So now, but isn't that part of your role, though, is to shine the spotlight on them and help connect people and let them know that all this is out here? Just, you know, kind of take advantage of it.
Absolutely. Telling the story and letting people know what the opportunities are and where they can plug in is important. And I think in the collaborative spirit of where we're heading as an economy nationally, that's going to become even more and more important, of people working together and rolling up their sleeves and you know, asking, how can I help?
Right. And if somebody wanted to learn more about Midtown Alliance, website?
MidtownATL.com.
All right. Well, we appreciate you being part of this.
Thanks.
This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Midtown Business Radio.